This is Foolish Adventure, episode 36, How to Create Valuable Content. Welcome to another episode of Foolish Adventure. I'm Izzy Hyman, and I'm here with my friend and colleague wearing a blue Think Piranha shirt, Tim Conley.
Hey, what's up, Izzy?
Hey, what's up, Tim? What's up with the shirt? What is it? Piranha Marketing. What's that?
It's my buddy Joe Polish's business.
There you go. Yeah. Awesome. It's cool.
Yeah, a little plug for Joe.
There you go. All right. A little plug
actually,
for Joe.
He doesn't need any plugs. Actually, on the back it says, eat your competition alive. Yeah.
All right. Okay. This one's going to have to be rated R for violence, apparently.
All right.
So, no, that's
all right. My favorite kind of movie.
So we've been talking, and just like a lot of our episodes, this conversation today that we're recording is kind of popping out of a bigger, deeper conversation that Tim and I have been having, and that actually Noelle and I have been having too, as we've been talking about different businesses that we see out there and websites and taking a look at the websites of people that are getting new, that are fairly new, getting into online business, things like that.
Right.
And so what we decided to do is really is just talk about how to create valuable content, because this is like one of the main things that a content creator needs to be able to do in order to have a successful web presence.
Right.
Okay. So there's a lot that goes into this, and this is going to be very organic. We don't have a lot of notes on this because this is just Tim and me talking as usual. Enough of the disclaimers.
Well, yeah, yeah.
What were you going to say?
Just, you know, let's just go with the flow. I know that we're going to cover a few different topics in this, because some elements have a importance in one element in one area of your business. You need to do certain things, and then in another area you need to do something else, and they're all related to the content that you're creating. So we're going to have to wonder for this conversation, I think, to actually make sense by the end.
Let's see. I don't know. Hopefully it makes sense. But how to create valuable content. So the first thing, let's talk about why it's so important to have valuable content. Okay. You know, what valuable content means, it's valuable to the reader, the listener, the viewer, or whatever. So why is it important to have it?
Before it's even important to have, like, what even is it?
Okay, right? So define it.
So we were just talking before we turned on the mics about essentially three different topics, categories. How to
as a type of content,
right,
that you can create.
Which is what we mostly talk about, like how to do something.
Yeah, informational things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, this is how you do X. And then we talked about entertainment.
Yep, entertainment is definitely a type of content.
And then we talked about news, and within news, there's essentially two subcategories of entertainment news, which is just stuff that, you know, here's what happened, and there's nothing that you can actually learn to do anything with from. And then there's the news that's, oh, this is the most recent thing that has come out on how to do X.
Now, you and I are not authorities on news
or entertainment.
On entertainment. And so the one that we really need to talk about is the informational stuff, the how-to stuff. And, you know, valuable content, it totally depends on, in my opinion, your audience. Because, like, for example, I do video production, videography type of content, right? Well, somebody who has no interest in that stuff is not going to find my content valuable. But somebody that's interested, a certain type of person that's interested, would find that stuff valuable. And so in other words, you have to know who your audience is. Like, to me, this is like one of the first things that you do, is you say, okay, who's my audience?
Well, I'll nuance that.
Okay.
So that, I would say that's more your market, and out of your market, you're going to build your audience.
Okay, so what you're saying is the market is the bigger pool of people, and then from there, based on my content and...
And things that you're going to create, because part of this is going to be the way we talk about when you're doing your passion, you're going to be creating stuff that you're passionate about, right?
Right.
So that might not exactly fit the broader market. And so you're going to end up pulling out of that broader market your people.
Yeah.
You know, those people who become your true fans that are interested in the way you present that topic. That's my definition of what an audience is versus a market. Because some people can actually create content for the market. And I've seen a few people like complain about other bigger sites out there that are teaching how to in the blogging world, where they're complaining that, putting out content that the masses want, but it's not necessarily content that actually works for an individual's blog. So there is some complaint about that exists. So you can do two different things. You can actually have a how-to content that's aimed at the broader world that lacks your uniqueness, I guess, so that you can be more mainstream and not so niche. That's a possibility, because even what we do, we talk about niching within a niche. You teach the video, but it's, you know, well, Mac users predominantly. And so you've gone a particular direction because, well, that's what you use and that's what you know. So therefore it pulls your audience. It's not like you were saying, oh, I don't want Windows users. It's like, well, I'm not a Windows user. So it's kind of hard for me to attract those, that is my audience.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to this idea of valuable content and how to create it, specifically how to, in other words, okay, you're looking for ideas. If you're trying to create a website and you're thinking, I want to create valuable content, how do you get started doing that? Where do I get the ideas? What kinds of things are people looking for? And it's funny how often that we have valuable content at our fingertips all day long, and we may not even be aware of it. Like, let's say, for example, that I'm struggling with something, you know, maybe I'm trying to figure out how to pull some sort of a Photoshop file into Final Cut Pro. Okay. Just as an example. And I spend the whole day researching it and I finally figured out how to do it. Well, if I were to document that process and put it out there as a blog post or a video or something like that, that would be valuable content to someone because it took me all day to do something. And now I can show somebody else how to do it in 10 minutes or 15 minutes or something like that. Right. So that'd be an example. So literally the stuff that we're researching on our own anyway could be valuable content. You know, if you're making a list of all the different, you know, if I'm making a list, okay, the next 10 things that I'm going to buy for my business, you know, in terms of gear or equipment or something, that's valuable content because I'm doing all the legwork behind the scenes to come up with that. And now I can make a post about it.
Do a flashback to one of our earlier episodes where we talked about different types of experts.
Yeah.
And one of which is the where you're documenting your growth in that niche and becoming an expert by just being one step ahead of the other people. They're coming along they want to do it too. And they feel a tighter bond with you because you're learning just like they are. And so it's not a being talked down to type content. So they treat you as if you were a full blown expert and will ask you questions as if you were, but it's that's that type of documentation that can actually build your whole audience by starting off that way. And as you grow, so does your audience, because you're still going to have stuff that you've created that beginners can come into, but you've moved on to being an intermediate. Well, your audience can move on to being an intermediate until you become an expert in everything.
What about this idea of taking other people's stuff that they've already put together, Tim? I'm curious to hear your opinion on this, and I don't know your opinion on this. I know my opinion, but maybe, you know, I'm curious to hear yours. What about this idea of like, okay, so I don't come up with anything that's my own or original or anything. All I do is pull together information from other places and sort of rehash what other people have already said and then put it together on my site.
Depends on how you do it.
Okay.
If you're doing it as calling it your own content afterwards, just a horrible idea. And unless there's some way that you can show how you took these other people's content, used it yourself, and turned it into something new, that's a valid approach. Or if you're taking other people's ideas and you say, here's what this person is saying, here's what this person is saying, and this is what I think can be gotten from these two separate viewpoints that would be useful. Those are two valid ways.
So it's like meta thought. It's like adding your opinion on what other people have already said.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that you're not taking credit for other people's work and other people's experiences. As long as you're not doing that, that's okay. But if you're taking their stuff and then you're adding to it, adding something new or a new insight from it, well, then that's a valid piece of content.
That's cool. I like that idea. It reminds me actually of an example that I have from my own site where a while back I had seen this video tutorial about how to turn a person's face into a demon using software. You know, it's pretty cool. I know that's probably not something that a lot of our audience is interested in learning how to do, but I saw how to do that using After Effects, but my audience didn't have After Effects. A lot of them have Final Cut Studio, so they have motion. So what I did is I said, okay, based on that tutorial, let me show you how to do it in Motion, which is a totally different piece of software, totally different workflow, but it's doing the exact same thing. So it's, you know, in other words, that video was very popular because a lot of people wanted to know how to do it in After Effects. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to just make another video that shows how to do it in After Effects. That doesn't make any sense at all. You know, that's already out there. So what I could do is make a video that shows how to do it in Motion. Same type of thing. It's not exactly the same, but it's very similar.
Right.
So that's another way to do it. Or you can, in my opinion, you can deliver it in a different way. Like a lot of the information that I talk about, you know, for example, just a basic thing that everybody's talked about forever is three-point lighting. How to do three-point lighting. People have been talking about that forever, for as long as there's been light, you know, and art and modeling and painters talked about three-point lighting. You know, key light, fill light, backlight. Anyway, everybody's talked about it. So why in the world would I talk about it? Well, I have a different way of talking about it. I have my own ways and I have my own way of communicating. So it's okay for me to talk about that, you know, especially if it's a lot of folks, when I talk about three-point lighting, it's the first time they've ever heard of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like listening to some of the older self-help guys like Jim Rohn.
Oh, yeah, you know? He's good. Yeah. I saw him live.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome. You know, I just like, you know, having your grandpa tell you not to be an idiot. You know, love listening to Jim Rohn. I don't agree with him on a good portion of things, but still I like listening to him. But what he was saying is that and others like him were, you can hear something once and it have no effect on you. And then you can hear it again, still have no effect. And again and again. And then some point in the future, all of a sudden it makes sense to you. You hear it from someone else and you'll attribute that insight to that person, even though maybe you've heard it 100 times before, but you'll attribute it because for something, somehow it clicked. And we have some of our audience members who will go back and listen to previous episodes because you'll find stuff that you didn't get before. You heard it. It was there. It went into your head, but it didn't click right then. And then you go back and you listen and you're like, okay, that actually makes sense to me now. You know, maybe certain things had to happen in your life. You had to have certain experiences before it made any sense to you. And then all of a sudden you hear it again and it's as if you had heard it for the first time in your life.
Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. And I also like little new discoveries, you know, where it's, you know, maybe mostly what you already knew, but there's like a little thing on top of it that you didn't think of that makes a big impact. You know what? An idea that just came to my mind is one of the things that I used to do that I've done for years, actually, when I'm trying to come up with ideas, especially when I was first getting started, I'm trying to come up with ideas of what am I going to be covering. And so I used to look in books and see the tables of contents in books and see what they used to cover. And I would go, oh, you know what? But just by looking at the tables of contents, I can see some ideas on things. And that's a good idea. If somebody's creating, you know, if you're doing cake decorating, get a cake decorating book and see what the table of contents is, right? Well, that's something I've done for a long time. And then just this last week, I signed up for Pat Flynn's email newsletter, you know, Smart Passive Income. Uh-huh. And one of the first emails that came was one great way to come up. It was something like a great way to come up with good ideas for your content. And he goes, I like to look at tables of contents in books. And he goes, and if you ever want to find out where to look at tables of contents in books, go to Amazon.com and you can see the tables of contents of almost any single book. And that is something I'd never thought of. See what I'm saying?
Right.
So that was very valuable to me. That's a major time saver and a money saver, because before I would either have to go to the library and see the book or go to the bookstore and see the book, or I'd have to buy the book to see the book. You know, so now this is a way where you can see the tables of contents just to spark, just to get your wheels turning. And of course, you don't want to do everything exactly the same that you see there,
right?
But you can use that as a launching point to brainstorm, to come up with ideas. So
for me, one thing I like to do is I have a couple of marketing books that are just on headlines. you know, copywriting books, and they're on headlines. And I like going through and looking at the headlines and coming up with concepts in my own niche. Because
that's a great idea. Because, so you start with headlines,
right? Because they're already headlines that worked in ads, so you know they get people's attention.
What would be an example of one? Just to put you on the spot here.
One would be, "Do you make these mistakes in English?" It's an old one. This one's like really old. Well, you can make very variations of that. Like, "Do you make these mistakes with email marketing?" So it's a simple way to, okay, then, well, what mistakes would those be?
That's going to help you structure your whole article.
Right. Well, yeah. What types of mistakes could you possibly have? And those books are awesome because they essentially just compile great headlines from the past 100 and something years. And you can just go in and look and like, wow, this one worked. So, you know, use that one.
That's sort of like the whole beginning with the end in mind thing. You know, begin with the end in mind, right? So you start with the end. It's sort of like writing your sales letter first and then creating your product based on the sales right. letter that you put together. It's starting with my end goal is I'm going to show you, you know, do you make these mistakes? And so that's cool. I like that. You know, another way to come up with ideas for stuff that I've done is I've looked to see what questions people are asking online, like in forums. I know when I didn't have an audience, I used to see what people were asking in forums on mm-hmm. other websites. And then once I had an audience, I started getting lots of questions coming to me myself. And so I just pay attention to the questions that I'm getting all the time. And then I just periodically write down, I've got a long list of potential subjects for me to cover in the future episodes because of all the different questions that I've gotten.
Right.
So, but when you're first getting started, you don't have that audience. So you're not getting those questions emailed directly to you. It's like, here, create something about this. Here, create something about that. You know,
right.
You don't have that. So you have to go out and see what other people are doing. So there's lots of great question and answer sites. There's lots of forums. You can get ideas.
I want to caution because part of the conversation that we were having offline and that really got us going to cover this was I've been doing research in a particular niche and I've seen, oh gosh, a couple of dozen websites in mostly blogs and stuff. And every one of these people, very creative people, but there's no difference between them. I could go from one site to the next site and not know who made this. Like, it's kind of neat. But if this was the first one and the only one I'd ever seen, well, then that would be great. But most of these people are all actually working in the exact same niche. So all their stuff looks exactly the same. So it's kind of the person who decides to be courageous and step outside of that.
You said courageous, which I think is a new word.
Yeah,
I think you were saying courageous and creative.
Right.
Courageous is a new word. That's brilliant.
creators who are I can't even say, I can't even talk now. But I'm seeing a lot of people who are looking at what everyone else is doing and then doing it themselves and then hoping to create a business from that. And it's just not possible. If there is no way to tell the difference between you and everyone else in your market, if you're making the same stuff that they're making, then you're a commodity. There's nothing new about you. And you have to become courageous and
step out.
I'm going
to disagree in one small area. Now, there is one thing new about you, and that's you. That's the thing that's new. That's the thing that's different. So I might be talking about three-point lighting when somebody else is talking about three-point lighting, but the difference is that I'm me. I have a different way of communicating than that other person.
I'm going to not agree.
That's okay. Right? That's totally fine. I'm just saying that that's definitely one way that you're different. You know, is that you bring you to the table, which is not something that they can bring to the table.
But I would say that if you are not so different...
You have to be different. That's
and,
true.
And even then... your end product has to end up being different. If you and someone else are talking about three-point lighting, but your end product is exactly the same, even if your personalities,
then it's a commodity. Yeah.
Right. Even mm-hmm. if your personalities are different, well, it's still the same product. So it has to be different. If you cannot distinguish between the two products, then they're the same. Just even though two
right.
different
that's
people
true.
Made them. So,
yeah.
And that's what I'm saying is I'm seeing people who are too afraid to step outside the norm of their industry to make something of it.
Very interesting. Yes. So what? Okay. So Tim, let's give some, let's not just talk about the problem. Let's talk about some solutions here too then. So how do you make yourself different? What are some things you can do to make yourself original, different, to separate yourself from what everybody else is doing in your market?
There's a few different ways. This is one I tend to stay away from.
Controversy?
Yes.
Yeah, that's an obvious one. Okay, so why do you tend to stay away from it?
Because it can blow up on you. Mm-hmm. And if it's not done well, it's just like comedy. If your humor sucks, well, it just falls flat and you end up doing more damage than if you had just, you know, played it straight. Controversy can be the same way. You can take it too far, even though you don't mean to take it too far, and end up with a battle as opposed to a slight controversy where you get people talking. So controversy is one, I just stay away from it.
It's funny because I was listening to Brian Clark on the Copy Bloggers podcast, the Internet Marketing for Smart People podcast, I think is what it's called. Anyway, and he was talking about how actually you don't even really need to try to create controversy because you will automatically create controversy anyway, just as you create content, because there are so many people out there and everybody has a strong opinion one way or the other. And so you will just automatically create controversy. So, you know what? It's so funny because I've actually done that myself, not too long, by accident. Didn't mean to do this, Tim, but I was creating an article that was basically saying, I wrote this post that was basically saying, video shooters, you need to be willing to work for free in some scenarios when, you know, and I have these conditions.
Right.
And then you can, and I was not writing it to create controversy. I picture my audience as mostly folks that aren't making money from video anyway. But I'm saying you guys have video skills. You should go out there and work for people. Don't even ask for money. It's good practice for you. It's great. You're helping them create content. You know, I created a whole bunch of reasons.
Exposure,
you get great exposure and all this stuff. And then, but I had a bunch of, it turns out I had a lot more video professionals in my audience than I knew about, because I mean, both sides of that camp showed up in the comment section on that post like crazy. And I was not trying to create controversy. I was just writing my thoughts.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? That gets me onto off topic, but sort of. isn't that called a tangent?
Yes.
So where you have this controversy where the controversy actually came from the old school, right? The people who had an investment in keeping the status quo. So those people never want change. They just don't, because, well, that mixes things up and they've got a good thing going. So let's not rock the boat. So if you lower the price by having some free people come in that are willing to work really hard and do their thing to be able to make a name for themselves, well, all that's going to do is it's going to lower our prices. And I don't want that. Well, I wouldn't want it either. You know, I wouldn't want to take a pay cut because someone else was willing to come in and work for less. But if you, which means even if you're old school, you've got to stay cutting edge. You've got to be pushing the boundaries so that those new people still can't hold a candle to you. And it'll, when it comes down to a client hiring the free guy or the experienced pro, they clearly go, oh, my project is much too important to hand over to someone brand new. I need this particular project has to go to this pro because he's got it going on.
Yeah.
Right. Which means you've got to differentiate yourself. You can't be a commodity. You have to be so different. But if there isn't a clear difference between you as the pro video shooter and the new guy, if there isn't a clear difference.
Yeah, that's a world of hurt.
I think the new guy should get the job, because it's going to be a better deal for the new guy and the business that's going to be paying the bill.
And the reason why I even brought this up is because this is an example of how I accidentally created a little controversy. And it's not something I do very often on my website at all. As I was writing it, to be honest, I was thinking there's going to be some people that don't like this article. I was thinking that, but I was thinking, but this is something I feel very passionate about. So I'm going to write this. And it was never like that. I'm going to get a whole bunch of new visitors to my website based on this, or, you know,
right,
or anything like that. In fact, I have no idea if it did bring any new new visitors. But anyway, so controversy is definitely something you could do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's like, to me, that could be very heavy-handed. So that's something to be careful with. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I try to stay. I'm very opinionated, as you can tell. But I don't do it trying to create controversy. So I seldom ever do that.
Yeah, controversy follows me wherever I go.
Trouble follows me.
What's another way to distinguish yourself?
I would say look into a different industry.
Okay. What do you mean?
Yeah. Step outside your own industry. A lot of people talk about, you know, thinking outside the box. Well, if you don't even know what the box is, which most people don't, it's just a cliche to them. You know, what's the box? Well, the box is your current situation, your environment, your thinking, all those things, which it's impossible to step outside your own thinking when you're thinking about something. So
you're blowing my mind here, right. Tim.
But a lot of people won't ever step outside that box. And that's what I was saying is this niche that I was looking at, all these people are doing exactly the same thing. And it would not be hard to just go, oh, wonder what's going on in this completely unrelated industry and seeing how they're doing something in my vein, like how are they giving information on a topic, and maybe I can mimic how they do it, and because no one else is doing that in mine, and then bring that new technique into my niche. And then now I'm different because I'm doing something that is not even in my niche at all. A lot of the internet marketers talk about doing product launches. Well, in the internet marketing world, product launches are a dime a dozen. You know, if you start getting on any list, you're going to get hit with a product launch, at least a product launch a week, if you're on a few lists. So they're not they're so common. But you take the product launch and you take it into a niche that hasn't seen one, like it's a whole different game. You will do so much better than you could taking that back into the internet marketing world.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so what you're basically saying is take what you know and then transfer it over to a different area. It's sort of like the headline thing. It's very similar to the headline thing, right, that you were talking about. You start with the headline in one area.
You're taking someone else's knowledge and bringing it into your niche.
Mm-hmm. So cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. While you're sitting there stewing and trying to come up with other ways to make yourself different from what other folks are doing already, I think clarity is a way to distinguish yourself. And I've learned
we
this.
We haven't done that.
No, we haven't. Yeah. Just as an example. Yeah. Where were we? Just kidding. So with clarity, you know, I think this is something that's helped me because I am saying a lot of things that are like when I say, here's how you use Final Cut Express and here's some stuff you can do with Final Cut Express. That's stuff that other people have talked about and shown before. But I think that I bring a new level of clarity. That's one of the ways that I tried, because I'm always thinking, what is the most efficient way for me to demonstrate this in the way that it's going to increase the likelihood that somebody actually understands it? You know, so I do things intentionally. Like I try to avoid acronyms. You know, acronyms will alienate people. This is just an example, right? But if you read any video websites, they're packed full of acronyms. And the other day I was doing a shoot and this other camera operator and I were talking and we're just talking back and forth. We're using all these acronyms. And then the actors go, wow, you guys really know a lot of acronyms, you know? And that's just, but see, it's hard to put yourself in the place of somebody who's new to this stuff. And one of the things that they don't know is your vocabulary, your acronyms, the specific, you know, terms that you're using, the basic fundamentals. Like I might say, oh, well, yeah, all you have to do is soften up the shadow edges and then you'll be good to go, you know, but okay, how do I do that? Right. So the idea is that you make things more clear than what somebody else is. And that gives you an advantage. That makes you different.
Right.
See how that was a long way to get around to that?
To get to clarity.
The irony.
Yeah. And for those out there thinking, well, how do I create clarity? One way, the only way that I actually know how, because I'm not that bright, is making things more simple. You know, just take a bigger problem and only talk about the smaller piece of it. and get that idea out first. And then you can, you know, go take another piece of that big complex thing and talk about that, and you'll get pieces of clarity.
There's other things that help with clarity too, like bullet points. But like if you're reading an article and you see things like Noelle and I were just talking about this, that she felt like her articles improved quite a bit once she started including subheaders, like subheadings.
Yep.
And she started including bullet points, and she started focusing on how can I make this as brief as I can and still communicate the idea without taking the long way around. Right. So, you know what?
No, nothing. Yeah. I'm just
you're just thinking about my long, complex way to describe yes. clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. That's nice. Yeah. Okay, Tim. So these are other, I mean, clarity, the way you communicate. If you are somebody that can add humor to something that is typically humorless, that's something that's helpful too. I mean, there's a lot of people that build their businesses and people go back and read their content because it's funny. It's an entertaining way to learn something.
Yeah. Frank Kern, love watching his marketing. And he does a lot of stuff that it just seems so natural, but it's completely scripted. And I know it is, but I still like watching it because it's done so smoothly that it's like you're hanging out with your, you know, your best friend. And he does it so well. That is rare. I wouldn't really want to try doing that. Like if I tried scripting something, I would probably come off so wooden that it would just be completely fake. But he does it very well. So if you can, then do it that way. You know, do your content in a way that really fits your personality. And then a bit of advice that Kern had actually said years ago was, well, you make your persona you, but a little more amplified, not like totally exaggerated, but you amplify your personality so it stands out more.
Okay, so what do you mean by this? Amplify your persona. What does that mean? That's pretty nebulous, right?
So,
tend to be somebody who is what?
For me, I'm an introvert, which I don't like going into places where I don't really know people. I really don't feel comfortable behind the mic unless I'm actually sitting here talking to you, Izzy, because it feels kind of weird. And so I have to make this slight persona of, okay, here's the guy who knows what he's talking about. I do, but I have to break outside of that introvert type of personality and just share it. In Kern, what he said was, for him, he's a surfer, he's a dad, he's these different things, and so he makes it look like he's this guy who doesn't really work very much, who lives next to the beach and goes surfing all the time. And he does. He goes surfing frequently, and he does these things, but he makes the persona of Frank Kern, the internet marketer, is this really laid back dude that, you know, you would love to just go have a beer with. So he makes that character, which are parts of his own personality, but he takes it and just amplifies it. So he's more like the Big Lebowski versus
the dude.
Yeah. He's more the dude than he is, Frank Kern when he's doing his marketing, because he does actually work a lot. He does, do a lot more things than he portrays, but he's crafted this persona because it works for his market, and it is still him, just a bit more amplified.
That's cool. So what you're saying, another way to distinguish yourself in your content creation is to have a different persona or have created an interesting persona.
Yes.
Well, Tim, that goes back to what I was saying earlier, which you disagreed with, and now you're making it as a point. And what I said earlier was, one thing that makes your thing different is you, which is your persona.
No, you and your persona are completely different.
No. Your persona is based on you.
Yes, it is based on you.
So that's not completely different.
But once you have actually put it into use, like once you've crafted that persona, when you're doing your content has to be that persona.
Okay, right.
So you can't ever revert back to, well, hey, this is what I had for breakfast today, you know, which is the real you. You know, I've got a snotty nose today, so I'm going to talk about that in my writing. Well, Because that's the real you. People don't ever see that. That's backstage.
Yeah.
That's the actor. But when you go to a movie, you want to watch
the performance.
The character.
Yeah, the character. Okay.
So when you're doing your marketing, when you're crafting it, and I don't want people to take this the wrong way. It's not like you're making a fake person. This is you, but only the parts of you that
you're sharing,
that your audience would actually care about. You know, they don't, they aren't going to really care whether you like Frosted Flakes or Mini Wheats, you know, for breakfast. They're not going to care.
Unless you want to make that part of your persona. Like, it would be interesting if my audience, everybody knew that I ate Frosted Flakes every single morning for breakfast. And that's something I always talk about. And you know what I mean?
Right. Because that becomes a persona.
Part of your persona.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have to, like, the whole "What's up, Izzy?"
What's up, Izzy? That's right? Your persona. Yeah.
That,
yeah.
People have responded to, to me saying, "What's up, Izzy?" So that's the persona. I don't really talk like that. Outside of doing
that's
this.
That's part of your persona for the show.
Right. And it was crafted. It was like, I did it as a joke initially, and then our audience responded thinking it was funny and liked it. So I kept doing it. And now it's actually a part of our show. So, and that's like letting people in to see behind the curtains. Like, those who think, oh yeah, this whole "What's up" thing is really funny. Well, it is. I think it's funny.
And it's not like it's calculated. You just started doing that one day and
right.
then just kept with it.
But now it's an actual part of the show, even though it's not something that I typically say to people when I'm out and about.
Yeah. You've only said that to me in the show.
Right.
You know, another example of persona that I'm just thinking of is Jason Calacanis. And I think he even talked about this once or wrote about it somewhere about how, if you think of Jason Calacanis, you think of the serial entrepreneur who has his bulldogs, right, and plays poker and drives an electric sports car. And that's kind of, he says, these are things that are very different about me that set me apart from everybody else. And that's part of who, you know, that's what I'm putting out there for the world, which is an interesting, I mean, it makes him memorable.
Right.
Yeah, he's always posting pictures of his bulldogs and shooting video of him driving in his totally quiet Tesla electric sports car and playing poker. It seems like he's always at a poker tournament somewhere.
Right, and uses that when he's talking about, well, stuff that other people are talking about in his industry. He's talking about it too, but, well, he's this other guy that has this larger-than-life persona. You know, he'll even throw in, you know, publicity stunts to just make his persona even more over the top. So he's really trying hard to stand out. And sometimes it actually comes off that way.
Yeah.
Where you can tell it's not really his persona. He's just making it. That's why you have to be a little more careful when you're crafting that persona. And it may take a while to get the right one that really resonates with your audience and is still authentic to you. So that it works for everyone, and you can actually grow a brand around it.
I like it. Another way to distinguish yourself or to make yourself a little different than what other people are doing is to choose to do it in a different medium. Like if somebody else is writing about a subject, you could do audio about the subject, or if they're doing audio, you could do video, or something like that.
Right, or even in the same venue. There's several people that I like to read that are talking about subjects that, you know, that I'm interested in, and both of them are talking about the exact same subject, but they do it differently, and they've got a slightly different take on the same subject. Sometimes their ideas are the same, and there's a lot of crossover, and then other times they've got, you know, opposite viewpoints. So it's nice to be able to come in and look at someone else's ideas and see how they perceive something. And so you can still be different. I think that goes back to that persona thing. But even if you're in the same medium, if you're in the same niche, just finding the different things that can make you stand out. It could be in adding pictures, you know, adding video. It could be adding audio. It could be these different things. But I think a lot of it just comes down to really, really having a voice And there's that term. It's in every type of medium.
Yeah, and writing. I know that's something that, you know, they teach you. You know what though? It's interesting because I think a lot of people in any medium start by imitating others. So I think this is what a lot of new people do at the beginning. They start by imitating others who they might quote consider the masters or the, you know, the people that have blazed ahead. And then as they become experts in their area and they feel more confident, then they start to innovate a little bit more and kind of make it their own. Do you see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
You start by imitating a little bit and then eventually do your own. What were you going to say?
Oh, that we did kind of the opposite, where we started off with our conversations and then we started looking around thinking, well, maybe we should try to be a little more professional. Right. And so,
that's a mistake.
Yeah.
We shouldn't even try to do that.
It was. Because we did some episodes where we decided, hey, we're going to introduce segments.
To be fair, it's because we've done it for these other shows that I produce in the scrapbooking industry, and it really works over there.
And it works in a lot of things.
It works in a lot of things. But for us,
we just didn't like it. It didn't seem authentic to us anymore. It seemed like, even though we liked the fact that we were a little more faster paced, it seemed that we were no longer what made us different in the market. Maybe that's just our own arrogance or laziness. I'm not sure which, but for us, it didn't seem that our conversations were as smooth as they used to be, where we were able to actually sit down and, you know, the two of us have a conversation about something.
Yeah, which is what we're doing today. Obviously, today we've gone back to our original thing.
And we
reserve the right to change it around and do different things. You know, as the creators of the show, we're going to try to do what makes us happy, right?
Right, so. Yeah. And that's another thing that we talk about. When you're creating content, if you're creating content just because you think readers are going to like it, stop that. You know, make it something that you're going to love as you do it. Think of it as like an artist. Like great art, the artist is not thinking, well, if I do it this way, I think the critics are going to love it. No. A great artist is focused on creating great art, and then they're going to attract the people who like it. And it may take a while for them to get that critical acclaim, but they are making their art first for themselves and second for their audience. And that's something that I really stress people to do. And not be so self-indulgent that you're, you know, just talking about anything that pops into your head, but actually crafting it. Because a good artist doesn't do that. They don't just paint anything that pops into their head. They don't carve a statue that just popped in their head. They put thought and effort and part of themselves into everything, every piece of art they make.
Yeah, I like the idea of focusing on your, you know, of, I don't know, I guess meeting your own needs through it, but and also meeting your audience's need. But I think that a lot of times people don't focus enough on meeting their audience's needs, because that's, to me, that's the definition of value. If your audience or your reader, listener, whatever, if whatever their need is, whether they need an answer to a question or they need a solution to a problem, if you're focused on doing those, of providing answers to questions and solutions to problems, whether, you know, using our three product approach, it doesn't matter which product you're talking about. The free product, if it solves people's problems, that's going to be something that's valuable. The paid product, if it solves people's problems, that's going to be something that's valuable. And not just problems, but also just answers to questions and any kind of solution, you know, times, you know, you can go a lot of different ways with it. So, man, I'm running out of energy. I think we better stop.
We've put a lot into this. I'd say in a wrap up that what we're talking about here is, as a content creator, that you need to differentiate yourself. You need your unique selling proposition, which is a term that we can go into in another place, or you can look it up. Dan Kennedy has some great stuff talking about a unique selling proposition, same as Jay Abraham. So you can go read those guys on unique selling proposition. You need to be different. You cannot be a commodity in your niche. You can't come in doing the exact same thing everybody else is doing in your market. You cannot copy other people's stuff and be a success. If you're doing it, stop it and find your voice.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Very good. So hopefully this information is helpful. And until next time,
enjoy your foolish adventure.
Thanks for listening to Foolish Adventure. If you found this information helpful and want more like it, please visit foolishadventure.com. Do you have specific questions you'd like us to answer? Leave a comment on the website. Who knows? Maybe we'll create a whole show to answer it. Also, we have a voicemail line where you can ask questions. The number is 480-331-4695.